that, I'll hand the call over to Neera.
Thank you, everybody. And we're very excited to discuss the results of this report. The report CAP is releasing today verifies that boosting the wages of low-wage workers through raising the minimum wage will lower government expenditures on nutrition assistance and reduce participation in SNAP, commonly known as food stamps. We're really thrilled that this report is available to everyone. It's been authored by Michael Reich. Professor Michael Reich and Rachel West at the University of California at Berkeley. And the headline really is that raising the minimum wage to $10.10 per hour, as the Harkin-Miller bill would do, would lower government spending on SNAP by $46 billion over the next 10 years. We hope conservatives and others who've been interested in reducing SNAP expenditures for quite a while now will join us in supporting the minimum wage increase. And with that, I'm really excited to introduce Senator Brown, who is joining us. There is really no greater champion for working families. He has been a strong fighter for increasing the minimum wage and a whole series of steps to address the needs of working families in Ohio and across the nation. And with that, I will introduce Senator Brown, and after that, we'll hear the comments of Professor Reich, who is one of the leading experts in the country on raising the minimum wage and its effects on the economy. He's authored several reports and has a recent article in Politico that I commend to everyone. And first, let's start off with Senator Brown.
Neera, thank you, and thanks for the work that Center for American Progress does. It is so important. And Professor Reich, thank you for joining us. CAP's leadership on all of these issues, this range of issues, has given us the tools we need to make the case, I think, for smarter public policy, and I'm so grateful for that. Right now, working Americans are sort of getting it from both ends. We've seen an orchestrated attempt to cut food stamps, to cut SNAP and other safety net programs, with opponents saying they foster a culture of dependency and don't reward work. But these same elected officials, some of whom voted to raise their own pay, oppose efforts to ensure that hard work is rewarded with fair pay. One House Republican last fall said, if anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. While I'm all for quoting scripture, I don't think it was quite that way, and I don't think it should be used to villainize hardworking people. Detractors of SNAP and a minimum wage increase can't have it both ways. By raising the minimum wage, we know that we create opportunities for more Americans to earn a living wage and no longer need benefits from programs like SNAP. 100 years and 2 months ago, Henry Ford made the decision, announced that he was going to increase or to pay all of his workers, from the person sweeping the floor to the person assembling cars, $5 a day. He was criticized vehemently by his fellow industrialists, but he didn't do this likely out of the goodness of his heart, this $5 a day. He understood that it would generate more economic activity. It would mean more people have money in their pockets. It would be good for the economy, and more people could buy his cars. And that's in many ways what raising the minimum wage is about, too, not just for those families that will benefit from this and those neighborhoods, but our economy as a whole. Our productivity as a nation has increased 85% since 1979, while inflation-adjusted wages increased only 6%. In the meantime, the value of the minimum wage has fallen 21%. Think of that. Productivity has almost doubled. Inflation-adjusted wages has barely gone up. The value of the minimum wage has actually dropped over 20%. Workers are not seeing the wealth that they have created in the companies that they work for. In the aftermath of the recession, job growth has been in the low-wage job sector. Men and women who lost their good-paying middle-class jobs are returning to work at low-wage jobs, jobs that make it difficult to support a family. At the same time, enrollment for programs like SNAP has obviously grown. In 2011, 45 million people, one-seventh of the U.S. population, relied on these benefits. SNAP spending increased to $78 billion. Keep in mind, SNAP has a work requirement. These are moms and dads who work hard and take responsibility, but too many are working harder than ever and barely getting by despite their best efforts. That's why millions of fast food workers in cities across the country took to the streets in December for a National Day of Action, protesting the need for a living wage. More than half of frontline fast food workers, including more than half of those that work more than 40 hours per week, earn so little that they are forced to enroll in public assistance at a cost to taxpayers of $7 billion a year. That's why I support the Fair Minimum Wage Act. It would raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour in three 95-cent increments, 95% upon cents when the president signs, and then each of the next 2 years. It would do something we haven't done in the past. That's, it would provide an automatic annual increase linked to change in the cost of living. It would also gradually raise the federal minimum wage for tipped workers from the current $2.13 an hour to 70% of the regular minimum wage. $2.13 an hour has not been increased since 1991. About 60% of the tipped wage workers are in the restaurant industry. It means 40% do things like valets and various kinds of other jobs at airports and in hotels. Let me share a letter I received from a gentleman in Cuyahoga County. Tom wrote, "I'm a 50-year-old food service worker with a college degree. I make $7.40 an hour. I just closed my retirement account that had $2,500 in it to pay my bills. It's still not enough to cover everything. Now with that money gone, I should be able to qualify for food stamps. I have only the most basic bills. I don't have any credit card debt or loans. How much longer do we have to wait till you increase the minimum wage? How much longer do we have to wait for a livable wage? It's time every American has a chance to earn a decent living wage and the opportunity to realize the American dream." Pope Francis said soon after becoming the pontiff, said to exhorted his parish priest to go out and smell like the flock. And with all the biblical references and all that means, he was talking to people like us, too, to get out of Washington, smell like the flock, meet the people who are trying to make ends meet, to pay their bills, to put food on their table, to support their families. I'll stop there and turn it back to Neera. Thank you, Neera.
Thank you so much, Senator Brown, for those comments and, again, for everything you do. And now I'd like to introduce Professor Reich. Professor Reich, would you like to comment?
Yes. Thank you, Neera, and thank you, Senator Brown, for your comments and to both of you for your work extending the dialogue on this important issue. As Neera mentioned, I've done a series of studies of minimum wage effects, and this is another one. We find the headline, I guess our headline findings, are that the Harkin-Miller proposal would reduce SNAP enrollments by about 3.5 million people and reduce expenditures by about $4.6 billion a year, or $46 billion over 10 years. In the report, we also break down these results or these effects on a state-by-state basis. That's in Table 11, the last table, and I think an important table as well. I want to spend my time on why the study is important. First, it's important because we fill two big gaps in the conversation about minimum wage policy. First one is the effects of a proposal like Harkin-Miller on government spending, in this case on food stamps. Very little actual research has been done on these effects and practically nothing or nothing on food stamps. It was surprising to me that the recent CBO report didn't even mention any possible reduction in food stamp spending. The second reason that our study is important is that we distinguish among three different scenarios that have been in the minimum wage conversation. So let me run through these. Scenario number one, the minimum wage is mainly a job killer, and it doesn't improve the lives of people and tends to help. If that's true, then a minimum wage increase just increases unemployment, which would put more people onto SNAP and increase SNAP spending. So in that scenario, minimum wage increases leads to higher effects on SNAP, positive or greater effects. A second scenario, I'll call this the CBO scenario, says that Harkin-Miller would lift 900,000 people out of poverty, but at the same time, 500,000 people would lose their jobs and earnings entirely. So, in other words, the Harkin-Miller would have both positive and negative effects. And the positive effects on food stamps would cancel out the negative effects on food stamps, more or less, according to my calculation. So this second scenario says that Harkin-Miller or a minimum wage increase would have no change on SNAP, no And there's a variation of the scenario from the Heritage Foundation, which says that very few SNAP recipients work, which also suggests that a minimum wage proposal, a minimum wage increase, would not affect SNAP at all. So that's the second scenario, no effect on SNAP, or very little effect. Third scenario states that minimum wages increase wages, but without causing job loss. As I have found in my previous studies as well. And in this scenario, the positive effects of the minimum wage lift not 900,000 people, but 4.5 million people out of poverty. And so then the minimum wage would lead you to predict, a minimum wage increase would lead you to predict that SNAP enrollments and spending would go down. Our method and our findings clearly support scenario three. We don't assume that any one of these three is correct. We test that through our methods by controlling for a lot of other forces that affect SNAP besides the minimum wage. So our results clearly support scenario three, namely that the minimum wage has positive effects on wages, no effects on job loss, and more importantly, it allows Americans to be able to support themselves through their wages rather than through government assistance. Our results do not support the first or second scenarios that I laid out. So let me stop there and see if there are questions which I'll be happy to answer.
And at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. And we'll take our first question from Dave Jameson with Huffington Post.
Hi, thanks everyone for doing the call. Mr. Rice, just so I understand, because some opponents of the minimum wage increase are already pushing back against this, but the numbers that you came up with on food stamps, they assume that there's little or no job loss that comes with this?
No, it does not make that assumption at all. It makes no assumption about any of those three scenarios. It just finds that these are the effects of minimum wage increases. We go directly to the effect on SNAP. We don't go indirectly through the effect on the minimum wage on employment. So there's no assumption about what would actually happen. I'm telling you what the implications are for each of those scenarios.
I see. So what they're saying already is that there's going to be some negative job effects on this, and that, say, if people lose hours or lose work,
right,
that they're going to wind up in the food stamps program. So,
yeah. Well, you know, that's not what this study finds without making any prior assumption about what the effect is on employment. I would also refer you to the article that Neera Tanden mentioned in Politico that I wrote a couple of Fridays ago responding to the CBO estimate. And I can speak to that further if you're interested.
Thanks. Is Senator Brown still on?
I think he had to depart.
Okay. Well, thank you.
And as a reminder, it's star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Eric Morath with the Wall Street Journal.
Hi, thanks for having the call. When you talked through the different scenarios, and you mentioned, I wanted to see which of those is reflected on the table 10 and 11 that looks at the state-by-state breakdown. It looks like there's three models given there. Which is the right one to refer to if I wanted to say, you know, the effect in California, for example?
Okay, well, the three different models those are different from the three scenarios. I was just laying out.
Okay.
Okay, the three models are just three different statistical methods for estimating the effect of an increase in minimum wage on food stamps, and they're independent of any whatever is the right scenario. And one of them relies on data that's at the family level, 1.25 or so million observations. The second and third models use state-based data over 22 years, and so we have about nearly 1,200 observations. So the numbers aren't going to come out exactly correctly. Exactly the same, because there's a slightly different statistical method that's used. The third model uses expenditure data, which we don't have at the family level. We only have enrollment data. And those are basically coming out fairly similarly on the enrollment results for all the different for all the different states. So you can say there's a little bit of a range in our estimates. That's always the case with statistical studies. But what's reassuring is the estimates are very, very close together. So, you know, we're pretty confident about the results.
Okay. I'm sorry. Can I just, real quickly, can you just put a little bit of economic context around this? You know, talking about $4.6 billion per year, certainly in comparison to the savings that we've seen in the farm bill, that's quite a bit more. But in comparison to the giant federal budget, it's kind of a rounding error. Is it a significant level there?
Well,
from your view as an economist?
4.6 is about 6% of current SNAP program expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's every year, not just in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know all the details or have studied the details of the Farm Bill, but my reading of the headlines is that was cutting SNAP benefits by 10%. So this is close in magnitude to that,
mm-hmm.
also having benefits.
I think that was 10% over 10 years in the final bill, not each year. This would have a more significant impact than the final bill. But obviously, Republicans had proposed $40 billion in cuts. So you can take it in that context. It seems to me a pretty significant savings to the food stamp bill in comparison to the discussions in the mainstream about savings to food stamps. And I would also caution in comparison to the budget overall, that this is only looking at the effects on one program, not the effects of a minimum wage across all programs. And I know Professor Reich is interested in looking at other programs like EITC and everything else. But you should only really compare this to the food stamp budget, since that's all that we looked at.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll take our next question from Lorraine Wollert with Bloomberg.
Thank you. I haven't had time to dig into the details of the report, but if we're lifting, let's see, like 3.3 to 3.8 million people out of food stamps, we don't have a whole lot of people earning minimum wage now, right? I mean, that sounds like a...
No, many times people go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics website table that says how many people are earning exactly or below the minimum wage. And the number is, you know, like 3.5 million people or something like that. But that's a very uninformative number. What's informative is how many people earn near the minimum wage, like, let's say, 10% near the minimum wage or 15% near it. Those are the numbers of people who would be affected. That gets close to the number of people who would be affected by a proposal like Harkin-Miller. So I refer you to use the larger numbers.
So, in other words, people even earning above the minimum wage would be affected by an increase.
Well,
earning
above the current minimum wage.
Yeah, the current minimum wage.
Right. If they're earning $7.25 or $8 in California or whatever, they're going to see increases. If they're earning today under $10.10, or roughly today under $10.10.
Yeah.
Some people will also get increases, will be above 10, or already above 10-10, typically because the supervisor still wants to, want to have a differential with the people who work below you.
Yeah.
The Congressional Budget Office did do some good research on that effect, and they said it would go up, the increases would go up to people who, that would go to people who earn up to $11.50 an hour, not just to 10-10, that so-called ripple effect.
Right.
All the way up to $11.50, And we don't make any assumption in our study about how high the ripple effect would go, but we do think that I do think that that's a pretty good estimate by the CBO.
But, Professor,
and could you
just to clarify that one point? Sorry, can I just clarify that point? Didn't CBO say it was 17 million people who would be directly affected by an increase from the current 725 to 1010?
It said 16.5 million.
Thank you.
And then there's another 500,000 who'd lose jobs, which I dispute. So I think it would be 17 million, the number you cite. And then there's about another 8 million people who fall between 1010 and 1150 who would also get increases. And they cite that, too, in the CBO report, but much later in the document.
Thank you. And then can you just clearly restate, like, the bottom line conclusion here? You said it would allow more Americans to be able to support themselves without government assistance. I mean, that's the upshot.
Yes. Many more, millions more.
So I think she's looking for you to say that, Professor. If you don't mind.
Okay, I'll restate that. Sorry.
Since you're the winners of
that area. Our results show that minimum wage increase to $10.10 would reduce for probably 3.5 million people the necessity to support themselves out of government assistance, that they would be supporting themselves out of their own earnings.
Thank
you. For government assistance on food stamps, to be more precise.
Thank you.
Okay.
And at this time, there are no other questions in queue. I'll turn the call back over to Katie Peters.
Great. Thanks again to everyone for dialing into our call this morning. If anyone has further questions or needs additional information, please call me or email me. Again, my phone number is 202-741-6285. Also, the report is now available on the CAP website, so you should have no problem finding it. But if you need anything, be in touch. Thanks again.
Yeah. Also, may I add that if anyone wants to follow up with me directly, my email address is Reich, reichkeley.edu.
So just to say that again, I think because you came in and out, it's R-E-C-H at...
No, R-E-I-C-H at berkeley.edu.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you.